For almost 30 years, Eli Rosenbaum has been pursuing Nazis living in the United States. That's been his official job at the Justice Department. In December, Congress told him to broaden his search to include criminals from wars around the globe. NPR's Laura Sullivan recently spent the day with Rosenbaum and has this profile.
Inside Eli Rosenbaum's office, there's no place left to walk, let alone sit.
Forgive the mess. It's the way I live.
Every horizontal surface, the floors, the chairs, even 3 inches of window ledge, are covered in paper.
Projects. Believe it or not, I can actually find things.
Eli Rosenbaum first came to this office as a summer intern in 1979. Since then, he has tracked former Nazis living in the United States with a dedication that verges on obsession. Now he's on a new mission, hunting war criminals the world over, from places like Cambodia, Rwanda, and Chile.
We've gone from Nazi criminals to really the entire rogues gallery of bad guys.
Unlike the Nazi cases, though, Rosenbaum's new targets will likely be younger, as will their victims. Searching for Nazi criminals living comfortable lives in American suburbs has been a job rife with frustration. Many of the men, and they've all been men, die of old age before they can be deported.
We are very much in a race against the Grim Reaper, and from time to time, the Grim Reaper wins.
Rosenbaum walks briskly down a corridor from his office to one of two main file rooms. Row after row of metal file drawers house millions of records, most half a century old.
Lots and lots of paper.
Prosecutors and researchers spend years steeped in death warrants, orders for mass murder, and prototypes of killing machines. Even for Rosenbaum, the records blend together over time, except for one.
I would say of all the things I've ever seen, the one single document that will never let go of me is the death warrant for 6-year-old Fruma Kaplan, signed by Alexandra Stalakis of Norwood, Massachusetts.
Alexandra Stalakis was a Lithuanian immigrant who led the Nazi-backed security police in Vilnius, Lithuania. The unit killed more than 50,000 Jews there. In the 1980s, Rosenbaum discovered Lalakis living the life of a retiree. Lalakis challenged Rosenbaum to find his signature on a death warrant. It took Rosenbaum 10 years. He pulls out a thick white binder. Each page is carefully encased in plastic. Now, Rosenbaum knows exactly where to find Lalakis' signature.
And this is horribly a death warrant for a 6-year-old girl. And this has Lalakis' signature on it. And he writes that, I request that the Jew Gita Kaplan, born 1896, and her daughter Fruma, being held at my disposition, be turned over as of 2 December in 1941 to the German security police chief. The German security police chief was in charge of the killing squad.
Alexandra Stalakis fled the United States in 1996 when he was 88 years old. He died several years later in Lithuania. For Eli Rosenbaum, this case was personal.
It was a little girl, and it was so easy to imagine a 6-year-old girl clinging to her mother in terror, and there being nothing that the mother could really do for her. It's the ultimate parental nightmare, and it... I'm sure didn't help that at the time that I was working on that case, I had a 6-year-old daughter.
The documents of the file room often lead Rosenbaum to suspects and sometimes to dramatic interrogations. Back in his office, he reaches into his desk for a recording of one he remembers almost by heart. It's an interrogation of Jacob Reimer, then a Brooklyn businessman.
He was a non-commissioned officer in an SS-sponsored unit based at the SS training camp at Travniki, Poland. That camp was basically a school for mass murder.
Rosenbaum slips the recording into his disk drive.
Mr. Reimer, just in your own words, tell me about the incident, whatever you can remember.
We stayed in a barrack someplace outside of Travniki. Where? I don't know.
He denied many things and eventually began making some admissions. And ultimately, he admitted leading his men on a mission, as he put it, to liquidate a Jewish labor camp. His words.
They all woke up. They all woken up. And they were all sent to exterminate a labor camp.
He then said that the Jews were assembled in a pit in the forest. His men shot and killed them all.
This interrogation, like most, takes hours. Jacob Reimer tells Rosenbaum that while his men did the killing, he overslept.
I did not participate. I was not involved in the shooting.
Rosenbaum is relentless in his questioning, and Reimer begins to change his story. Reimer says he was at the killing site that day. He says he did walk to the pit's edge, and he looked down on almost 50 people below. But, he says, all the Jews were already dead. And then Rosenbaum pushes further.
Weren't there some people who were still alive down there who had to be finished off?
There was one. He was pointing with a finger to his head.
On the tape, Reimer says the man was trapped in the pit with the bodies, pointing to his head as if asking to be shot.
There's something about the man who pointed to his head that you haven't told me?
Yes.
You finished him off?
I had to do something. I couldn't very well just stand there. I had to make an effort or something.
And then Reimer does something Rosenbaum hears all the time. He begs not to be deported.
It would be the worst punishment for me to be deported from this country. This is the only country I know.
I do remember thinking when it was over that it sometimes feels as though those of us who work on these cases are in a kind of a twilight zone of unreality. There's no criminal violation under American law. And so all I can do is bade him farewell and send him home. But if he had so much as slapped a security guard in the face on the way up, I could have him arrested. But all he did was participate in mass murder in Europe, and so I have to let him go home. It was strange.
25 years of seeing the worst of humanity takes a toll, even on Eli Rosenbaum. His escape is to return to a different era, to the sound of his youth, of hot New York summers in 1967. Mixed in his drawers with the interrogation tapes are recordings of old radio broadcasts.
There it is.
When I'm driving to and from work, it's on the radio, it's usually, you know, 1967 or 1971 or something like that. These recordings take me back to a time before I knew all these terrible things that I know now, and it's very relaxing.
In this era, Rosenbaum is trying to move forward. A book on Cambodia's totalitarian dictator Pol Pot sits unopened on the corner of his desk, and new files are fighting for shelf space in his office. Different wars, different soldiers, same crime. Laura Sullivan, NPR News, Washington.